Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Are you doing a bit? Chris Russell just came in and told us we have to be out of the parking lot by 4:45.
No, that's real. There's an email, right, guys? I'm dead serious.
I don't know anything about
today. The parking lot thing? Yeah,
so
that's
what do
real.
We do? We just, you're saying thumbs up, but then we're on the radio.
Look at the signs.
I don't know what we're supposed to do. We'll have to figure this out.
We'll have to figure that out.
On our own time. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the, everyone's very calm. Like, yeah, you got to be out at 4:45.
Where does anyone go?
There's a way for me to do that. I don't know what to do. A reminder to kick off your future with the law firm of Condori and Murad. They're the official G&D show sponsor. Help protect your assets. Update your will and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com. Mention the show to get a discount, kmlawyers.com. Leave it to old Slasherini to come in here with the bad news, by the way. Like, you guys know you got to have your cars out of the garage in an hour, right? What are you talking
about? I totally
forgot
about that. Whoopsie-daisy.
How do you know about it?
There was an email.
What? Or a company account?
I'm not sure. I definitely read it, and I couldn't remember what day it was. I mean, I've been out of it for a few days. I'm hopefully forgiven for that.
This is what happens. CK tells me like once every 2 weeks you got to check your company email. I'm never going to check my company email. I have a Gmail. It's so easy to get in touch with me there. We're in a stare down here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm sure there was an email. I don't know what to do now. Let's talk college hoops. That'll put us in a good mood, right? BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com. I have a bracket in my hand right here. The bracket of integrity, Greeny. Yes, Greeny. Right here. We want to get to the bottom of what's going to happen in the tournament with a guy that knows a thing or two about college hoops. I talked to him on BetQL over the weekend. He is a wealth of knowledge. Tom Casale is with us. Sportsline. Tom, thank you so much. We appreciate you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, bud.
Please forgive us for our little panic before we brought you on. We just found out maybe our cars are going to get towed any minute.
Yeah, well, that sounds a lot more important than March Madness.
in the immediate. Big picture, no. But for this afternoon, yes.
Not as of Thursday. So let's start with who got jobbed the most with either region or seeding that you thought had a chance to make a deep run and you like a lot less now that the bracket came out?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there were some teams. I think, like a lot of people, I was surprised that Florida Atlantic was that high of a seed. I don't think it's going to impact their tournament. You know, I think Iowa State is a team that I bet at 100-1 a while ago. And they're the number two with UConn. That's the toughest region, in my opinion. So I know some people thought Iowa State could be a one. I think they would have had a lot easier path to a Final Four and a deep tournament run. But putting them in the East with UConn and all those other tough teams, I think that's the team that might get tripped up earlier than I would like them to.
I love this Arizona team. I only saw them a couple times out there on the West Coast. I don't know if I trust them or not because I don't know what the Pac-10 is or was. I mean, it's hard for us here on the East Coast really to see them enough. But what do you make of this Arizona squad, Tom?
They're talented. It is hard. They play a tough non-conference guy. I mean, they play teams in the non-conference, so you have to give them credit for that. The Pac-12 was really bad. Really bad. I'm going against Washington State in round one. But you look at it, there was two Pac-12 teams securely in the tournament, Arizona and Washington State. Colorado was the last team in, so they could have been in or out, and Oregon needed a tournament run to get in. So you're talking about a Power Five conference that really had two tournament-worthy teams. So it was down. So the one thing I'll say about teams like Arizona, and this might apply to FAU too, sometimes when you're in those conferences, you get a little bored. And it's hard to get up every night. If you're not up in the Big 12, you're going to get slaughtered. If you're not up in the SEC, you're going to get slaughtered. But I think sometimes, to me, Arizona didn't look like they were playing with the kind of intensity that they do coming off a loss. If you look at Arizona coming off a loss, they slaughter teams. You know, people like USC in the Pac-12 tournament, as soon as I saw they had Arizona in their second game, I said, no shot. Arizona will blow them out, because when they're focused, Arizona is very tough to beat.
I'm looking at my bracket right now. I'm having a hard time not having UConn win the national title and cut down the nets. They've been the best team in college basketball this year. They're the defending champion. They might have the best coach, maybe the best roster. But everybody is picking Connecticut. Is that a reason for me not to?
No. Connecticut's the best team. I didn't pick them just because I wanted to be a little different. If I'm in a bracket pool towards the end, you know what I mean? And maybe you get an edge if somebody can beat UConn in the Final Four. But if you said to me, your life depends on it, you have to pick one team to win the NCAA tournament, it wouldn't take me 3 seconds to tell you UConn. They're the best overall team. Here's the best way I can describe UConn. I thought St. John's played one of the best games I've seen any team play all year. And they were losing by 11 with 3 minutes to go against UConn. That's how good UConn is when they're on their game. I don't think anybody can beat them.
Tom Casale with us here on Grant and Danny, breaking down the NCAA tourney. There are a couple teams that are enigmas to me, Tom. Probably more than a couple, but someone like Kentucky, who's so obviously talented, so good, but hasn't always been consistent with results. I think there's probably a handful of teams like that. Give me one of these boom or bust teams that you could see making it to April, or could be out the opening weekend.
Well, there's a couple of them. Kentucky's obviously one of them. Yeah, it was Kentucky. What you're looking for if you bet a Kentucky future is you want them to get out of Florida and Marquette. I don't know if they will, but there's one team in that region that matches up well with Houston, and that's Kentucky, because they can score. Kentucky has shown no problems scoring on anyone. Auburn, Tennessee, they can hang 80 or 90 on any team. That could be the recipe to beat Houston. The question is, do they get there? Another team that's an obvious, I mean, they could lose by 20 on Thursday, or they could go to the Elite Eight, is BYU. Because BYU shoots a ton of threes. And if they're on, they're going to be tough to beat. But in that early game, Duquesne, if it's a sleepy kind of game, they could go out early. And then the other one to me, I'm not overly high on them in general. I do like them in their first round matchup. I'm in the vast minority. Alabama. I think Alabama will run Charleston off the court. But then that second round matchup against St. Mary's, you know, it's the difference for me between Kentucky and Alabama is Kentucky has shown the ability to play a little bit of defense. Alabama doesn't like to play any defense. So it's hard for me to see them make it a deep, deep tournament run.
Give me a 2 seed and a 3 seed that could be in trouble. It seems to always be either a loss by one of those seeds or they're on the ropes late. Give me the team that could be most on upset watch.
Yeah, the 2 seeds, I looked at that. Here's the problem with Tennessee. Like, if Tennessee had won the SEC championship, I'd say watch out. They lost back-to-back games at the end of the year. So they're coming in. You're not going to get them not motivated, I don't think, against St. Peter's. You know, I don't think South Dakota State is a great matchup for Iowa State. Marquette could be fully healthy against Western Kentucky. So if I had to throw one out there, and I don't have metrics or anything, but just kind of the March Madness thing, you know, Long Beach State fired their coach like 2 weeks ago when they're in the tournament, right? So, and we mentioned Arizona sometimes isn't motivated. Maybe that's kind of a March story in that first half or so, or they're giving Arizona hey, you know, Long Beach State fired their coach. And so I would pick that one probably just because you can't trust Arizona all the time. And the three seed, I think, that could be in the most trouble is Illinois. This is another team I don't trust. When their offense is rolling, they look good. They don't always play defense. Morehead State has a couple of guys who are better than your typical mid-major. So if Illinois, just coming off that Big Ten championship, if they're not motivated for that game, they could be in trouble.
A couple of locals are in action this evening. Virginia, I couldn't tell you what the hell happened to them. I saw them look good a couple times. It looked like they'd never seen a basketball in a handful of games that they lost. And then Howard here locally. What are the chances of those two guys?
Well, obviously, like most people, I'm not high on Virginia because they have trouble scoring. But, you know, a buddy of mine years ago always used to bet the team that nobody wanted in the tournament and nobody thought should get in the tournament, because he had a theory they're going to rally around that. If there's one team that can come in and make America miserable, Virginia, right? That's the type of team that nobody wants to see. You can see them. I think the Mountain West is a little bit overrated. I could see them stymieing Colorado State. And then Texas, who has a ton of talent, that's a team you can frustrate if they end up playing Texas. So yeah, I could see Virginia winning a game or two just because of their style of play. And, you know, I like Howard in the first game. I think they get by that game. And then, obviously, the season's going to be over.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for them, I guess, to get into the tournament. But they could be cannon fodder for North Carolina. Hey, one more local here as you're broadcasting with us in D.C. on Grant and Danny. Before we let you go, Tom Casale is with us. JMU, the 12 seed, drew Wisconsin, a 5 seed in the South. What's that matchup like for them? How much of a chance do you give them to advance to take on the winner of Duke, Vermont?
I give them a very good chance. This is the game I'm looking forward to the most. I bet the over. I thought 144.5 was a little low. I made it 147. You guys know JMU likes to play fast. I bet Michigan State before the season. I liked the team. I was wrong. Okay. I watched that game against James Madison. I know it's only one game. But I said after that game, if you took the jerseys off those players, you wouldn't know who was who. Now James Madison isn't as deep as Big Ten, but when you look at the starting five or six players, they are very talented. And here's the problem with Wisconsin. They're one of the worst three-point defenses in the country. So I think the first 10 minutes of that game is crucial, because if James Madison is hitting shots and they force Wisconsin to play their style, I think they got a great shot at an upset. If they let Wisconsin they get up 22-11 and Wisconsin can turtle up and milk possessions, then I think they're in trouble. So that first 10 minutes for JMU, I think, will dictate if they can win that game.
Tom, is Purdue going to Purdue?
I don't know if they're going to Purdue. Here's my problem with Purdue is, at some point the guards are going to have to win games in the tournament, right? I do think, see, that region to me is the region where it's a prove-it region for Purdue and Tennessee, but I can also see Purdue and Tennessee meeting in the Elite Eight. You know, I don't like Kansas. I don't like Gonzaga. I think Creighton's a little bit overvalued. Texas can surprise if they show up. But to me, that bracket really sets up well for Purdue versus Tennessee. And when they get to Tennessee, if they get to that Elite Eight, I think Tennessee can throw a lot of bodies at Edie and rack up fouls. And I also think they're very athletic on the perimeter, and that's going to cause Purdue's guard some issues. So I have Purdue going to the Elite Eight, but I think Tennessee's a bad matchup for them.
Tom Casale, college basketball expert, getting us ready for the tournament, helping you fill out your brackets. Thank you for the time. We appreciate you.
Anytime. Enjoy the games.
Thanks, Tom.
NOLA.com and a college basketball analyst with Sportsline as well. Good information from him. Brendan Haywood's going to join the show tomorrow. He does a lot of work with CBS, NBA TV. He'll be all over the tournament coverage. Looking forward to having him on the show to help us get more answers ahead of Thursday.
Brendan, that's awesome, man. By the way, he's a really good analyst for college hoops. Like, it's always interesting to me where guys, some guys will go pro route. Some guys will want to talk about the NBA. Like guys like LaPhonso Ellis, I think, has done this. Brendan Haywood as well. Really, really good college basketball analyst.
We should let people know, by the way, we're going to be at Tap Sports Bar on Thursday and Friday for the tourney. I love doing this.
It's the best.
Those 2 days in general.
Perfect.
Like, as good as it gets as a sports fan. When I was in high school, we'd go to a buddy's house, get out at noon or whatever, and just post up and watch games. College was probably where it all peaked. You could just say that for everything.
Yeah.
But in college, you would be in somebody's dorm or you'd go to a sports party, whatever it is you're doing. Nowadays, though, as just old guys with kids, to be quote-unquote working, but we're live on site at a sports bar, at Tap, they've got a million TVs. They got the games on. You can pivot with volume as well.
It's perfect.
Food is great. They've got all kinds of specials on their appetizers throughout the day. MGM National Harbor, first round of the tournament, 70 flat screen TVs, all-star roster of local and seasonal craft beers. We will be there, so we'll be Mitch and Finley all day on Thursday, all day on Friday. This is an annual tradition for the Greg and Dave Show.
It is my favorite sports weekend of the year. It's perfect. Every second, there is a game, and if that game doesn't pique your interest, don't you worry about it. There's another one 30 seconds away, and then another one, and another one, from basically noon to midnight for four straight days. It's perfect.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Danny, back in the saddle. I have not had a chance to ask you this yet.
Oh.
So this weekend, Major League Baseball was playing the spring breakout games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as part of those games, we actually got to see the implementation of challenging at the major league level for balls and strikes. This is significant because I am very pro this system being brought to the major leagues. The way it worked, and we'll play a clip in just a moment for you, was that the umpires call balls and strikes naturally. If they get a call wrong, then the catcher or the hitter can challenge the call. They tap their helmet. The umpire immediately turns around, he's mic'd up, to the press box, says Danny Ruye or Grant Paulson is challenging the call.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately on the big screen, just rapid fire within a few seconds, they show the strike zone, they show the ball coming toward the plate. Everyone in the ballpark gets to see whether it was a ball or a strike with technology. They react in real time. It's an engaging process for the fans. And then we find out, umpire was right, umpire was wrong, and we keep playing. Well, there was actually a sequence in the Diamondbacks-Rockies game where shortstop Jordan Lawler immediately said that was off the plate, not even close, tapped his helmet, and then two pitches later hit a double off the wall after he got to stay in the box because the call got overturned.
So good. Bring it immediately.
This is this was video, and this is TV, but it's how it sounded for this review, Rockies-Diamondbacks.
Slider, Drew Romo stole that one.
Now we're going to get a challenge by the...
And you know what? This looked like it may have been off the plate. Yeah.
He's correct.
Yeah, he's correct. He's correct.
They even tell us how far it was off the plate. That's so cool.
Well, this ball's hammered to deep left. It is off the base of the wall. It'll be
so
a double.
So obviously the last part was edited to skip ahead to two pitches later when he doubled. But the rest was real time, where he goes, oh, we're going to get a challenge. Let's see. I think it was off the plate. Oh, wow, it's way off the plate. Wow, it's 1.8 inches off the plate. Let's go.
Immediately. So my biggest issue with Major League Baseball's challenge system, or whatever you want to call it, right, is the umpire stands there looking towards the dugout. The manager stands on the top shelf or the top step of the dugout with his hand up. And he's looking back at a guy who's on the phone, who's saying, one more second. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. To me, here's what it should be. Bad call. You come out and you go, I'm challenging that. There's no on the phone. There's no review. There's no review to see if we want to review it. It's bang, bang. It's egregious or otherwise. Then we got to get moving. We got to go. The hold up and delay way too long interrupts the game. That doesn't interrupt anything. That is the amount of time it takes for the catcher to flip it back, the pitcher to grab the rosin and step back on the hill for the next pitch. That's perfect. Immediately. Adopt it immediately.
Yeah, so here's how far I've come around on the ABS challenge system. Instead of just true automated balls and strikes, which I've always wanted. This is now my way to meet you in the middle, people. If you're a Clary out there who likes calls being wrong and likes the human element.
The human element.
Three out of the four of us on this show are extremely correct and want this right away. Clary does not.
Which one of these is not
We'll hear
like
from him in a
other.
Moment. But This is my olive branch. I want every single pitch done electronically so that all the calls are correct. But if you want the human element, you want the umpire blowing calls because it's just part of the game and it's fun that way, I get three challenges. I have to selectively use them and strategize having them as the game goes on. That's the current way in AAA. That's how they did it in these spring breakout games. I get three of them. So I've got to pick my spots. Is there a runner on? Is it a critical situation? I'm not just doing it willy-nilly. If I hit all three, I get another one at the end of the game. But to me, this is an agreement we can all have. You don't want us to have automated balls and strikes because you still write checks and you still ride a horse when you go out in public.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you bathe in a lake somewhere. You're allowed to keep doing those things. The rest of us will suffer. However, I want three challenges, and I want to be able to get some calls right. I believe I hear Clarissa explains it all off in the distance because you know Ryan Clary would like to defend.
Come swooping in here.
Incorrect umpires. Can we get an agreement on the challenge system?
Team Laz Diaz over there, what do you got?
No, we cannot, unfortunately. This just isn't me. And you know what? It just kind of comes down to this. Like in football, I'm a forward thinker. Basketball, forward thinker. Baseball, I'm a traditionalist. The reason why I say that is because baseball is kind of an imperfect game in itself. You look at the defensive side of things. In baseball, when you possess the ball, you're on the defensive side of things. Baseball is just different in general. So when I go down and I see an umpire, Grant, let me ask you this. What was the best moment that you saw at Nationals Park last year? What was the best thing that you saw?
Maybe Alex Cole's walk-off that hit the foul pole. Maybe Joey Meneses going deep to cap a big comeback.
Really?
Yeah, maybe a C.J. Abrams steal.
What about Davey Martinez
doing something athletic?
What about Davey Martinez on all fours arguing a call? I think arguing calls is part of the game. I think it is. I think it's part of baseball. When you have a 162-game marathon, every game is going to be a little bit different. But I think those games kind of stick out a little bit. Gets on SportsCenter. It gets us in the media to talk about something different. I think that these calls, while, yes, a ball missed ball call, it's infuriating in the moment, but it hasn't ultimately costed a team a World Series before.
That's not correct. I mean, you can't say that.
Say it has either.
Well, you can say that a strikeout.
What team has been costed a World Series because of a missed ball call?
Well,
San Diego Padres. Tino Martinez's ass was out. Struck out. Everybody in the whole park knew it was strike three, except the umpire who called it a ball. Two pitches later, grand slam, Yankees win.
But every single game in the World Series that's ever been played has been affected by incorrect calls. We can make fewer of them incorrect.
Okay.
All three of the games the Nats lost here, go back. I'll bet you there were 16 calls that were wrong that could have changed an at-bat. Every single Rangers-Diamondbacks last year. If we go back and watch the game, there are scorecards now. There was probably 40 calls that were bad in terms of balls and strikes. A 3-1 count instead of a 2-2 count, you know this, very, very different. A walk instead of a strikeout to lead off an inning in baseball, massive. Massive game-changing sequences constantly. But if you want to continue to shop with your checkbook, again, the rest of us will suffer because your inability to get with the times. But why can't you then just meet us in the middle to give us the correct practice three times a game?
Okay. I could potentially do that for three times a game. But the reason why I don't really want to is, and again, admittedly, I'm a traditionalist in this sense. Like a few years ago, I didn't think Barry Bonds should have been in the Hall of Fame. I've come around on that point, though.
Wow.
I think he should be in the Hall of Fame.
You also hated the time.
Yep.
Speeding up and the clock that they put pitchers on.
Yes.
You didn't think the game should be quicker, and you came around to love that last year.
Yes, I did.
So maybe.
Maybe.
You'll just love this, too.
I don't think I will, though, because then again, we won't have those Davey Martinez moments. We won't have legendary Earl Weaver moments. What are they going to argue if you can challenge everything?
Guys, they're not allowed to argue right now, literally. It's in the rule. They cannot argue balls and strikes right now.
Yes, of course, but they still do, and you know.
Yes, and they're still going to in the future as well.
Not if you have a challenge system. If you have three challenges per game in the fourth one and you can't challenge it anymore, then sure, there's going to be an argument.
Here's why they will. Because you can't just burn them willy-nilly.
Yeah, like in the top of the second when you get hosed on a pitch, I can't burn my challenge now. You're screwing us.
When 6'10" Jordan Baker is standing 8 feet above the batter and the pitcher and the low strikes are not being called, or when someone's calling balls in like constantly near the dirt being brought up, Davey's going to whistle and go, "Get your act together. You're blowing the game here.
Yes.
Let's go." and the umpire's going to make it about him and rip off his mask. Davey's going to come out and crawl around and throw a rosin bag like it's a bomb, and you'll be happy.
Yes.
It happens, by the way, once every 2 years anyway. So we're just not going to advance the game for the once every couple of years. Davey's done that at Nats Park and when you cured my heart.
Exactly.
In Houston. Those are the two times.
Yes, but then again, like also in baseball, like managers going after umpires, it's a tale as old as times. But you cannot tell me that Davey getting in the manager's face, or in the umpire's face, game six of the World Series did not change the momentum of that series after the Trey Turner play there. That changed the game. That changed the momentum of the series after losing three straight at home, which the Nationals did after going up 2-0. Davey Martinez gets in the umpire's face in game six of the World Series.
Yeah, Rendon doesn't homer ejected. If Martinez doesn't yell at the umpire.
Of right. course.
I
yes.
think that the Rendon homer helped more.
Oh, wait, it was more Rendon homering.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even still,
momentum
the point
was real,
is fine,
though.
But this is a different conversation. You're now doing a different thing.
Because this will be eliminated if you do.
It won't be.
Then
managers will never argue again.
Because we're meeting in the middle on three. What if you're just unlimited? Hey, let's check that.
That would be even better. Can't wait.
But then it changes the game a little bit more. It gets
yes.
it, there's
for
a
the
little
better.
Bit less
just
for
like
us to talk about
year.
In the media. There's a little bit less to talk about on SportsCenter, whatever it is.
Then
I think,
maybe we'll have to talk about like CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore. That would be terrible. Talking about the players and their achievements.
I know, but a 162 game marathon, like we can talk about it or not. Like teams do, like we do talk about this stuff. And
about
it's not even
stuff?
Just about that. Like I just think things should not be fix when they aren't necessarily broken.
Oh.
Baseball is not broken in this sense. They've lasted for 150 years with
oh,
this.
Man.
I think they will be fine. You need a human element. You need a human touch.
But you agree that the game is better than it was 2 years ago with the expedited clock, the quicker game, the pace, the tempo. You agree with that now?
I mean, yes.
It wasn't like, broken before.
I think it's better with the quicker tempo for like the average fan. But for me, like I was going to be there for a 4.5 hour game
sure.
or a 2.5 hour game.
But you thoroughly enjoyed the changes.
I mean, I enjoyed the changes. Like, I understand why they did it. But, like, then again, it didn't affect me either way. Like, I like getting home 20 minutes earlier. That's nice. Yes.
Wasn't broken, in your opinion, but was better. It's now better.
I mean, it's 20 minutes better. Like, I get to bed at 11:20 instead of 11:40.
The pace is better.
The pace is a little bit better.
The implementation of stolen bases is better.
It is a little bit better in that sense. Like,
okay.
Yes, the pace is just a little bit better, but I just don't think this ball and strike thing is going to really affect baseball as big as that will.
How well, let's touch the people. Are you guys in on automated balls and strikes challenges? 800-636-1067. We can dive into that with you next. I also want to get back into the draft and the number two pick because there's some news on someone the Commanders have been meeting with as it pertains to the number two pick. G&D on the Fan.
Here in Scottsdale, the Rockies will not play one night game during spring training this year. That just missed. And here's the challenge system. This is the first time we've seen the challenge system. Drew Romo said, I thought that was a strike.
Call a ball.
That was a strike.
Right.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Ball's overturned. That's interesting. They've seen it at the minor league level. Drew Romo gives himself a fist bump. Buddy loves it.
Take seconds. You get to see it on the big screen at the game. You're engaged as fans. I think it's a smashola, a win for Major League Baseball. Not coming to the big leagues yet, but it would be if Commissioner Paulson was in charge. Danny Huhey?
Oh, without a doubt. This is right now I'm adopting it for this Major League season. Eventually, we'll get to the point where the umpire is just relaying the information to people.
Yeah, he'll still be there. There'll still be a human, but he's just going to be told in his ear whether it was a ball or a strike. We're going to take
You can raise that arm or keep it down, right? We'll keep it real simple. Because here's what's happened that nobody wants to acknowledge or realize. Having played this game at a decently high level in my own right decades ago, it's too fast now. Nobody can keep track of it anymore. The ball is manipulated and moves more quickly than human beings were ever meant to be able to do. 100-mile-an-hour cutter from Emmanuel Clase. Human beings weren't supposed to be able to interpret those sorts of data points, let alone hit them, let alone be able to say, well, that caught the corner a few feet in front of me and over kind of to the side of my perspective. we've now gone past the way this game was invented. You know, a guy that worked in the factory during the day named, you know, Stockings Magoo, putting snot on the ball with arc on it, and he throws a real speedball out there. It was like 76.
My
right?
favorite
the world
is
different.
Walter Johnson. You guys wouldn't believe how fast his fastball was. It was 103 miles an hour. And then they actually, like, used some technology to try to decipher it in a documentary I watched called Fastball. At one point, it was like, we're projecting that it was like 86.2. And I was like, tell me more. And I'm not trying to besmirch his achievements.
I'm going to say, why are you running down Walter Johnson? What did he do to you?
Stop telling me through 102. Yeah. He didn't. I saw this guy on Instagram. It was a great bit. So this guy was, like, talking about, like, I am what the peak athlete looks like. And he basically looked like a taller, little less fat version of me. But he had a big old gut.
Yeah.
He was just a heavy guy. Not a dad bod, like too fat for that.
Okay.
But he was doing like backflips off of a stanchion into water. He was like going on, basically rollerblading off ramps and doing flips and stuff. And it was like pretty incredible for his size. But in the first comment was like, if this dude was born in 1915, we'd be talking about him like his Babe Ruth. And it's like so true.
Yeah.
Like it's just different back then. Are you guys ready for the challenge system for automated balls and strikes that we've been playing clips about from the breakout games? Kevin's in Centerville. Kevin, you got first ups.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, buddy.
Yeah, Danny, you're right. Let's go back to like the 1890s with the steam locomotive and like have people travel from place to place as well. No, you get with the times. Tennis is better with this. Football is better with this. Basketball is better with this. They each have their own limitations and everything. But for the love of God, we need to stop Angel Hernandez from ever messing up calls again. And he needs, you know, this system is, it should be called the Angel Hernandez system.
So Kevin, you're so right. A vote against this, Mr. Clary and company, is a vote for Angel Hernandez.
And I would tell you what, you actually bring up a good point. I know it's a little bit of shtick. If there was way more accountability for umps and guys like Hernandez or like Marty Foster who were picking fights with people or John Hirschbeck weren't coming down like gesturing at Bryce Harper, challenging him to throw downs. If there was more accountability, I wouldn't be so gung-ho in favor of this.
Oh, agreed.
I would feel differently.
No, I'm 1,000% more inclined and more inspired and motivated to do things like this because Laz Diaz can't ever be reprimanded. And Angel Hernandez, nothing can be done for how terrible he is at his job. Chris is in Hyattsville. What's up, buddy?
What's up, guys? I have mixed feelings about this. I'm not a big fan of the umpires union. I do think they have too much power, not enough accountability. But I would not be a big favorite fan of this for two reasons. Number one, I worry about losing the pitcher's strike, which I think has been an art for as long as baseballs have been around.
Also known Greg as a
Maddox
ball.
Greg Maddox was possibly the greatest pitcher of my time, my generation, you know, including, you know, Randy Johnson, obviously, and those guys. But, those guys are dying and we're moving into this arms race where everyone has to throw 99 and, you know, young guys are getting injured and it's just about how fast you can throw the ball, which is not as entertaining to me.
This is actually a really
I totally
good
agree
point.
With that, by the way.
Make your other point real quick. Go ahead.
Well, as long as baseball's been around, it's been the same game, whether you're 9 years old or in the major leagues. And there's no way that youth leagues can afford to, or, you know, global nationwide match what will have to be in the majors. Like, you're not going to have robots or pitch, you know, Hawkeye at your little league field.
No, but I mean, you don't have a lot of things now at the little league field they have at the big league facility. And every other sport is doing things that aren't. When you play ankle biter football, you can't throw your red challenge flag if you're a head coach. That one doesn't work as well for me. His first argument's actually something I haven't thought a lot about, which is a good point. Not that I care, but like Paolo Espino cannot exist in the major leagues if he's not getting some called strikes off the plate, right? If you are crafty as a lefty, if you are painting 3 inches off the plate and getting the call back in the day. Like, there are some insane. Have you ever seen the Levon Hernandez NLCS start?
I mean, these are pitch outs. Eric Gregg exactly. ringing up every time Tom Glavine threw to Javi Lopez. A foot and a half outside. Just,
now, I don't think that's a good thing,
yeah,
by
just
the way.
Doing Mortal Kombat uppercuts.
I think that's nonsense. But for the guys that used to get, you know, a ball off the plate or whatever because you can paint, I would just say paint over the corner. But he's right that stuff matters more when you've got to be in the strike zone.
100%.
And more velocity and more stuff is going to be important than just, you know, someone who can kind of add and subtract and pitch. Justin, Fredericksburg, what's up?
Hey, love your show, guys.
Appreciate you.
I got two ways of handling. I'm pro for the challenges. I think in each inning you should have one challenge, and when the team gets a challenge wrong, you lose the right to challenge the rest of the game. And
each
then second
inning.
Of all, I think umpires will have a stat on who has been challenged against and lost, and then therefore the cleaner record should be able to umpire, let's say, playoff games.
But we already have all that, sir.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for the call. We know there's literally a site you can follow on Twitter, I do, with umpire scorecards mm-hmm. after every single game. They are tracked based on the data we've had for years on what a strike zone is and whether they're right or wrong. For every single pitch that gets thrown, that's already happening. There's just nothing that's ever done for the worst. There's no punishments. Dave's in Silver Spring. Dave, what's good?
Hey, Dave.
D&D, appreciate you guys taking my call.
Thebotic.
So I'm totally for this. Like, remove all doubt. Like, then there's nobody left to blame except for the player's performance on the wins or loss. Like, it cleans up the game. On a side note, I'm with you, Danny, or Grant, you said it, that the speeding up of the game made it more enjoyable to watch on TV, but in-person fan experience, it completely ruined it for me. Like, being able to, like, getting up, going to concessions.
Yeah, you're not
like,
alone, by the way.
An entire inning. Like, that, it, and, like, your cost per minute that you're spending at the stadium just grows exponentially. Like,
well,
the amount
if you think about it that way, Dave, we're up against it. I'm sorry, but good phone call. If you think about it as far as you're spending the same amount or more on tickets every year, the game's now cheaper. So a movie that you're spending on used to be 2 hours and 10 minutes, and now it's an hour and 46. You're not getting the bang for your buck. You're in and out really quick. I remember we went to a game last year. It was like an hour and 51 minutes or something,
yep.
You and I. Or maybe it was even less than that.
It was like before our show. It was an hour, 40-minute game.
It was insane. But I just sat down, got something to eat, and it was like the fourth inning, and then the game was almost over. And it was, you can't feel like you got bang for your buck.
Yeah, so you're going, I still get the 54 outs, right? Or give or take, right? 27 outs per team. But the in-between time, to his point, like if you go to the bathroom and stand in line, get a popcorn and come back, you probably missed an inning.
That's a thing. I won't go as far as saying it ruined the experience. For me, it moves, there's pace, you got guys on base, there's stolen bases. I'll take it, but I get what he's saying.
Yeah, there are trade-offs.
If you spend time really thinking about that element of it,
mm-hmm.
What I'm paying and what I'm getting, not ideal. Double Play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. About 15 minutes from now, we are blitzing. We got Fogarty tickets for you at 4 o'clock on The Fan. Have you started filling out a bracket yet?
Yeah, I've got a couple going.
I'm working on mine right now. I have filled out the stuff I feel good about, which is like a total of 15 teams are on to the round of 32. And now I got to do a little more digging on
mm-hmm.
the other matchups. I don't know why I'm taking it way too seriously. Here's what's going to happen. 8 of my teams are going to be left in the Sweet 16. I'm going to throw this thing away 9 minutes into the tournament. That's normally what happens.
Well, what normally happens is when we go to the sports book and you just open up the kennel club.
That's true.
You just put a whole bunch of underdogs in your kennel and you win 75% of your bets.
You know what I did last year? So that was like 3 years ago maybe that we did that or more, where I just bet on all underdogs and your boy made a good living that day.
Mm-hmm.
The most successful sports betting day I've ever had financially in one day, not an exaggeration, was last year on the first day of the tournament. I took the first half under, I think it was, on every single game. I'm trying to remember if it was the first or second day. And I cleaned up. Do you remember that?
Not specifically, but that's interesting.
My logic, which was just stupid, was these guys are going to come out tight and they're not used to this.
Yeah, it's an unusual court.
Exactly.
It's a neutral site. Everything's weird.
So based on that stupid logic, it was a bunch of unders.
And then you rolled.
I was just cleaning up.
And you rolled.
I gave all that money back as the tournament went on.
Oh, sure.
And some more.
Well, those buildings aren't tiny, my friend.
We will be at MGM National Harbor for the first round of the NCAA tournament Thursday and Friday. B. Mitch and Finley 10 to 2. Danny and me 2 to 6:30. Come hang with us. They got 70 TVs. It is time for our double play. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
So we do this normally when I go on vacation. I wasn't on vacation. If you guys just tuned in, you didn't know I had a significant to me, but minor as far as surgery goes. Some surgery on my sinuses and a whole bunch of other stuff to try to fix some ongoing issues, whatever. But I was laid up for a handful of days. So normally when I go on vacation, we play how much weight did Danny gain on vacation? Because what this is, and I'm pointing at myself here, is a very delicate ecosystem where if I'm not perfect, if I don't do everything I'm supposed to do exactly right all the time, I balloon up like a fat, disgusting whale. So, because I was laid up, just basically lying in bed, I'd go to the bathroom, could eat a little bit, but it wasn't really doing very much, wasn't active at all, per doctor's orders, not just general laziness, but also some discomfort, I did gain some weight. So, how much weight did Danny gain when he was out for surgery? Wow. Any questions are very welcome.
While healing.
While healing, yeah.
I want to know, what did you have for lunch and dinner typically? Were you, you know, restaurant food? We're bringing you Jersey Mike's. How are we doing it?
Thursday, couldn't really eat very much. That was the day of the procedure. So Wednesday night, I treated myself. Treat yourself. I got some Chinese food. I had some General So's and Chef Specialty Crispy Shredded Beef with rice, two egg rolls, duck sauce, and a little hot mustard.
Was that Thursday night?
That was Wednesday night. That's when this whole thing kind of starts.
Okay. So you have the surgery Thursday.
Thursday, didn't eat a lot Thursday.
At all, all day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not much eating.
So you basically fasted for 24 hours.
Yeah, because I had to fast the 12 hours before, right, morning of, can't eat, and then surgery happens.
A couple pounds doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Friday.
Friday, we got back into it. Friday, in order to take all the meds, I had like a normal breakfast, like a Catalina Crunch cereal, a little bit of fruit in it. I got a protein bar. And for dinner, nothing crazy. It was like, you know what it was? Actually, it's this low-carb pasta with turkey meatballs.
I'm sure.
Which was not great.
Weekend, how did we eat?
I had pizza on Saturday night.
Okay.
I did. I had pizza on Saturday night, pepperoni.
How many slices?
That was a three-slice situation.
It's not bad.
It's not normally what I would do. Normally, I would do six, but again, yeah. It's hard to eat, whatever. I did have a slice of cake. Not a big slice of cake, but a slice of cake.
Okay.
That was my only vice, I would say.
Sheet cake?
Yeah.
From where?
I think it was a Safeway situation.
Love a Safeway sheet cake.
I think it was a Safeway.
Sunday?
Bacon and eggs with some low-carb toast. That's brekkie. And lunch, not much going there. A little smoothie, I think.
Okay.
And then Sunday night, I think it was like a regular...
Corned beef and cabbage.
Something like that. No, nothing like that. Like a regular dinner Sunday night.
Okay.
Yesterday, pretty much back to normal. Had my normal, you know, did some fasting, did a little, a couple of meat sticks, whatever.
There's not a lot of mystery here, right? We've heard pretty much everything he's eaten, and there's no exercise.
So that's the key. There's no exercise. That's the other part of it. That's the underrated part of this thing.
And so how many you weighed when?
So I weighed in Wednesday evening.
Before or after Chinese?
After. Then I weighed in last night.
Oh, so it's post-Chinese?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to say you gained 3.1 pounds.
Grant's in for it's 3.1 is your guess?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I did gain weight. It's not a trick question. I'm not doing some weird bit.
You've done that before.
No, I've never lost weight.
It went over like gangbusters.
Well, I just
sat around and went, what are we supposed to do
now? I didn't gain as much as I thought, and everyone was upset.
You gained like 2 pounds in 9 days.
Yeah, and everyone's like,
great job,
Danny. Yeah, great segment, idiot.
Just another quick question. Sure. Beverage consumption. Did we just stick to water? Did we have anything sugary?
Not much sugary. No, a lot of water. I had a smoothie or two just because that was easier to drink. I had some hot, a lot of tea. Helps heal throat.
Let's go with 5 pounds.
I'm just going to go straight up 5 pounds. 5 pounds even for Darius. Ryan?
I'm going to meet them in the middle here. I'm going to go 4.2 pounds.
4.2 pounds. These are actually really good guesses. I thought I would slip one over on you guys. So again, just to keep in mind, if I don't do everything perfect, I balloon up like a disgusting animal. I couldn't exercise at all. Couldn't even go walking. Couldn't even do anything. Wednesday night, 218.3. Monday night, 234.2. That is 15.9 pounds.
Wait, I think.
That is 15.9 pounds.
What?
Yep. This is why I wanted to play the game. I just sat there.
I think this is post-surgery, like, I don't know how to describe it. I'm not a doctor. Like pressure in your body.
Maybe.
Gases.
Could be.
I think you go to the bathroom once, you lose 11 pounds. Something like that.
I'd like for that to happen.
Danny Routier?
That's me, Chuck. 15.9 pounds. I didn't eat that bad. I promise you.
Yep. I don't know what to say to that.
I don't either. 15.9 pounds is what I gained.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Frank.
And you didn't really eat. That was after the Chinese.
That's right.
That you weighed.
That's right.
Here we go.
Wednesday night, Saturday night. Those are not good meals for me.
But those are dinners.
Yeah, but unhealthy dinners.
You overate at dinner.
Yes. Twice. Try to do something nice for myself. Not feeling real good, struggling.
I have no science to back this up. I'm going to say that surgery is weird, man. Like, it's just a weird thing. I think this is like a weird, fast forward a week, you're going to be down 14 pounds.
That's absolutely ludicrous.
Ludicrous?
There's weird fluids in you right now or something.
I'm sure of that.
The camera's put
in
there.
That's funny. Everything is weird. I mean, I know my whole ecosystem is off and everything's busted. Nothing works right. I still gained almost 16 pounds just because I couldn't do anything.
That's unbelievable.
I'm doomed is the point. Doomed.
Well, I think more so than anything else is he is what he is.
Damn We've it, learned Ron. That the hard way, Coach.
Oh, that was really way too appropriate.
Blitzing next. At the start of the blitz, we're giving away John Fogerty tickets. You got to be listening. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.